Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 171. As always, our podcast is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and buy some stuff there. Help us out. Help the podcast keep going and other stuff that we do. I am Derek. With me, as always, because it's his thing is Bob. What's up, Bob?
Man, you're struggling on that intro a little
bit. because it's his website, his podcast, so I don't know specifically how to say it, but what's up, dude?
It's nice here today. It is, we always talk about the weather. It is nice and sunny. I was just outside before we started this thing, so getting some of that nice sunshine and everything like that, hopefully, which I don't think this weather's staying, so that's sad. It's going to get cold again, which is not good, but...
Yeah, we got one more after today, and then it's supposed to get cold, and they're actually calling for rain, so...
Yeah.
Or, excuse me, snow, yeah.
Oh, you always get the snow.
I don't.
Yeah, so... But yeah, let's jump right into our reviews this week. And you reviewed a product, and a pretty interesting product, and one we've been excited about for a while now. It is the AlphaCool Ice Bear Extreme, and you can tell us just a little bit about it.
Sure. It's an AIO, but it kind of borders, it's in the vein of like the Swift Tech AIOs that came out, that was probably like 5 or 6 years ago, but we've seen a few since then that are meant as expandable, units. They're not your traditional, just they're closed loops as they ship, but they're easily, expanded into more in that they come with quick disconnect links so that you can easily, disconnect the tubing and then connect, add in parts like, AlphaCool offers radiators, GPU blocks, I guess that's about it. That's all you'd add in. And so this one is pretty massive, though. This is a 280 millimeter actual copper core Nexus radiator. It's a 30 millimeter radiator inside an aluminum enclosure. And then the pump and the reservoir are built into one end of it. So this thing comes out to be 60 millimeters thick, and that is like... It's basically the radiator with fans on both sides, all in one. It's all in one unit though, so you can't separate the fans and install it. Install fans on one side of your the top of your case or the front of your case, and then the rest on the other. So it's just a massively long and thick cooling unit, I guess you'd call it. And so like that's kind of the thing. It's called the Ice Bear Extreme. You know, it's an extreme product. And we had trouble getting it in. We really couldn't install it in our full tower review case. It's a Fantex case. And so we placed it on the top. We couldn't really bolt it down and have the top panel of the plastic shroud on it. So we were still able to test it. Excuse me. And it performs really well. So that's the good news. And it was kind of obvious that it would. This is actual like off the shelf water cooling parts. This isn't just, designed for limited lifespan closed loop parts. You've got really high quality stuff in here, and it's a really well designed product from AlphaCool. So I think let me get to that page on the review. It tested really highly.
I think it was second best, if I remember.
Second or third best, yeah.
Yeah,
third it best. Actually, it barely did it, but it actually beat out the actual custom, I guess you wouldn't call it custom, but it's the actual water cooling kit that we reviewed from AlphaCool, the IceDerm gaming kit. We did that last summer, I believe. So pre-configured smaller radiator, and it actually outperformed it. So this thing's got a fantastic pump and... good reservoir, and we know the block on this thing is great, and the radiator, I mean, AlphaCool Nexus radiators, they probably are just the best radiators on the market, hands down. So
yeah, and I think there's a big difference to maybe not a lot of people understand is like, you know, when you buy like a AIO from Corsair or I mean any of them, the radiator is going to be aluminum, right, for the most part.
Yeah.
So moving to copper is a big change, and that's going to obviously affect performance quite a lot, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, copper dissipate heats a lot faster than aluminum does, so it's going to perform better. It's much more expensive though, which is why we don't see it used in other closed loops, and that's something that you got to have with something like this that you're making expandable, because you could end up putting any type of you know, any other companies block in, and the only metals that we like to make contact are copper. Other metals introduced with each other, you know, it creates reactions, and then you're going to get corrosion and build up, and you can destroy your loop that way. So having the proper parts built into this from the get-go is just, it's an obvious choice, but it's a great choice, and it's also an expensive choice. So
how much is this kit?
It's right around 200. I actually think I failed to put that in the review.
Okay, but if you look at it, it does outperform Amazon. A lot of 360s, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it actually did. I mean, it is a 280, so surface area wise, because it's 140 millimeter fans, it gets a lot closer.
Yeah.
To that, but it's. Yeah, for its size though, yeah, it beats out a lot of 360s. So as it's super impressive. Because of the issues we kind of were having installing it, I was like, oh, well, let's just see what this thing does, and then got it going, and it was an easy install because the fans are already connected to it. It's everything's kind of like a nice neat package, and AlphaCool's CPU block design, the bracket and everything is pretty simple, so it was really quite easy other than the size of it. So. It's $210, so it's actually a pretty good price for what you're getting.
Yeah, I'm looking at other AIOs, like the Cooler Master Master Liquid one is $179. The Kraken X72 is $159. There's an Enermax one that's $159. So obviously, this is performing better than those, we could probably say. And you would say much better materials, obviously, with the copper core radiator. And I assume that the parts in general are just better quality.
Yeah, like I said, what you're getting with this is off-the-shelf parts. These are actual items that you could go and buy and select and use for your own, for like a custom build. These aren't like specifically tailored to the AIO, which makes them... much more robust, generally much better built, and much longer like lifespan on them as well. And in generally, they're going to perform better because they're actual water cooling parts and not just adapted for. I mean, if we're being honest, your average AIO isn't designed to last horribly, like all that long. You know, it's the lifespan of the pump, and they're not the most robust pumps in the world either. So
yeah. Yeah, so who do you think this is for? You think this is for somebody who, like, you know, has a pretty, I would say, powerful system, probably, like, maybe even a high-end desktop system.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they want to get into the water cooling, but, like, they're not just sure. But, you know, they have the ability to expand, I think, with this, which I think that's kind of, like, where AlphaCool is with this. Like, it's the big dog. It's... awesome performance, but at the same time, you can add on to it and you can learn kind of as you go, I would say, with this.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely for the person that is, they want high performance cooling, they want water cooling, but they don't want the mess of it. They don't want to deal with filling the loop and everything, because this totally saves you from it. With the QDCs, you just, if you buy AlphaCool's expansion products, you can easily expand your loop to, you know, add radiator space, add blocks, and you can have as big of a loop, as custom of a loop, as you could with any other custom water cooling loop, only it's all pre-filled and ready to go, so you don't have to deal with any of that.
That's pretty awesome. I like that.
Yeah. The only, I mean, the biggest thing with it, though, is measure twice and then order. We were sure that it's a full tower case that we test in, and we were sure it would work, and it didn't. And it all comes down to the fact that it's an enclosure, and you can't separate the fans and then like bolt from one side with the panel in between. So it really limits like 60 millimeters of space between the top of your case and the top of both the motherboard components, like the heat sinks and stuff on the board. You're going to run into issues there. You're going to run into issues with the power, the 8-pin power coming into the top. And then also, we ran into just issues with the case itself. Like, it was too far forward. Even though our case is built for a 420 millimeter radiator, it couldn't take this. So
yeah, I think that's the thing, too. And you're definitely going to run into issues with most cases if you wanted to even try to put it on the front of the case.
Yeah, certainly.
You know, because while a lot of cases do have an opening or have some room for like an AIO, they're not made for one this thick at all.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something again to, you know, to see. But yep. As long as you can find a chassis that will fit this, I think we would definitely recommend it. It's a really good product. You know, but yeah, I it's kind of weird, you know, being that AlphaCool is a water cooling company, they wouldn't have thought to like make those fans so you could do what you say is put the fans like, you know, outside the case like you would normally do and have the radiator kind of sitting inside. Yeah.
I mean it does simplify it though, because you don't have to mess with the fans and the wiring all comes through one spot. It's hard to say what the right choice with that is, because if they break it down much further, then you almost might as well go to a custom loop, I guess. And then the other part might be, because we didn't actually take the ends off this, the reservoir might actually be that, I'm sure it is that same thickness, and the pump probably might have required it. So that might be a big part of why it's that, it has to be that thick. Can't have the fans separate.
Well, definitely interesting product. I like, you know, we've seen this from a bunch of different companies that are making their own kind of traditional water cooling companies that are making their own AIOs now. It's good because people want the better performance, and they might want to expand, but you know, when you're first building your system, you're like, I don't want to deal with that. I just want to get my system up and running. And then later I might want to learn, or I might want to do something else with it. I love that, you know, AlphaCool, and there's other companies that are doing the same thing. So very cool to see. Definitely check out Derek's review if you want to learn more about it. Really, really cool product for sure. So that brings to my review, and I took a look at a pretty awesome product as well. I took a look at a Z390 motherboard, and this one comes from Gigabyte, and it is their Z390 Aorus Ultra. And man, this might be the best Z390 board that I've tested so far. The Aorus line for Z390 is pretty awesome. They've done a really great job with styling on these boards. Of course, it is an Aorus board, so you're going to get RGB lighting. But even without the RGB lighting, they've really done a great job to make these boards look really, really great. Black PCB with like silver accents. It's all heavy duty. You have, you know, M.2 heat sinks that match the board really well. On this board, you have memory as well as PCI Express slot protection, like the steel protection on there. So that kind of adds to the overall look of the board. And this board has pretty much everything you would want on a Z390 board. And you get a ton of extras. So first, this actually has three M.2 slots. Most Z390 boards have two, with the third being specifically for Wi-Fi. So you can't put like an M.2 SSD in there. This has all three, and they're all three are made for SSDs, and all three do come with M.2 heat sinks. So not only are those going to keep your drives nice and cool if you have one that overheats, but it's going to keep the overall look of the board the same. You don't want like one removed or something like that, and you put, you know, or if you just get two different M.2s, it's just not going to look cohesive.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. You get different brands, and then things start to really break down.
Yeah, so that's really great with this. Another thing with this board is you do get the integrated Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi is in the board. So you know, as much as I haven't had a main system that's been on Wi-Fi. I just haven't. I just don't want it. But you know, we're keep on moving to Wi-Fi, and having it on this board is nice. They do include their antenna that you can stick on top of your tower and all that. So you have Wi-Fi in this. You also have some really heavy-duty VRM heat sinks, and this is really important for overclocking or just like power delivery in general. We have seen it with the 9900K where the processor will actually downclock because VRMs get too hot. These VRMs are the heat sinks on the top of these are great. They're heavy duty. They actually have heat pipes that connect them, and the heat pipes do make direct contact with the power delivery components. So this is a huge deal, especially like I said, for overclocking, because when we overclocked, the temperatures were much lower than what we expected, which is a good thing. I mean, we were getting on previous motherboards getting around like 90 degrees Celsius at 5.1 gigahertz. Here we were able to do 5.1 gigahertz at like 75, 78.
Big difference.
Yeah, which is a huge difference. And the same setup, everything. So really great job on that. So again, if you're looking to maybe overclock, this would be a great board as well. This also has the integrated IO shield, which is something that I really hope that we get standardized across all boards, like even low-end boards. So many times I've put a case away and I left the IO shield in the case. It is so annoying. Or you just end up losing it, and that's not good either. So the IO shield is part of the motherboard. It comes attached. You don't have to worry about putting that in first before you, install your motherboard. It's all there, which is really great as well. Of course, this does have RGB lighting. As I said, there's a bunch of different spots on the board that do light up, and you get two normal RGB headers, so four pins, and two three-pin addressables. So you can, of course, connect all your different RGB components and control them with software. This does, for me, being a person who, you know, messes with motherboards a lot, this does have the debug LED on it as well. So if you do have an issue, you kind of know where, you can look up the code and see where the board's stopping. It does not have a power or reset or clear CMOS buttons on the board, which...
Really?
Yeah, I think we're kind of moving away from that on a lot of boards, just for the fact that, like, people are buying these for gaming a lot of the time. But it would just, at least for me, the clear CMOS would be nice.
Yeah. What is it? Jumpers?
Yeah, it's jumpers. It's
so retro.
Yeah. So that's the only thing I don't like. This has really good audio on it as well and great audio components. It's just a good, it's just like, it has everything. It looks awesome. Made for overclocking, made for gaming, all that fun stuff. And actually, one thing I did like in this, the accessory package is pretty good. Like, you get temperature probes in it, something that I haven't seen in a while. And you get some other stuff. You get some cool stickers and things like that. Just, like, more than just, like, SATA cables and a CD, you know?
Yeah.
So you get some more stuff like that. They also use their, I believe they call it a G connector, which makes it easier to connect your front panel headers. And, before I forget, this does have a USB Type-C USB 3.1 Gen 2 internal header, which means, like, if you have a newer case, a lot of the newer N1 cases have a Type-C connection on the front. You can connect that internally to the board.
Don't have to route it around the outside.
Yeah, you don't have to route it around the outside or anything like that. So, really, really great board. It is a little on the expensive side. I believe this is $245 or $249. $244.99. So, it is on the higher end. A lot of Z390 boards are, like, you can get them as low as like 170, 160. So again, what I always tell people when it comes to motherboards, what do you actually need it for? Are you going to make use of all three of those M.2 slots? Do you need the Wi-Fi? All that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Are you going to only use one card, one graphics card? If so, you might not need all the features, you know, things like that. But I think the price is justified given everything that you're getting. They also revamped their BIOS. They have their new easy mode, which is really easy to navigate and works really well. We did a video on that, which is in the review as well. So I think it's a great board. I think that, again, for Z390, you're going to be spending a lot of money anyways because the processors are quite expensive. But it's a good board. It really is.
I mean, it's really not that expensive.
It's not that expensive. But I think that, you know, when there's other boards, even Gigabyte's own boards are you know, cheaper. And with Z390, you're like, you're getting basically the same feature set. They all have certain things, right? Like the Z390 spec, you're going to get all this stuff. But here you are getting some extras, and I believe that the price that they're asking for these extras is justified. So. Check it out. Check out that review.
Agree.
Yeah, it's a, like I said, I love Aura Sports. I'm an RGB junkie, and they really are sexy looking boards. Like, they look amazing. So definitely check that out. And talking about stuff that looks amazing, we talked about this earlier this week, our Case Mod Friday build. And this one is called the Anodize. And this is by, he goes by Mods by Ben Q. His name is Ben. I like this. This is more or less a test bench that's been turned into a water cooling maze of sorts. I think it's pretty cool. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how you feel about the actual tubing and things like that. But basically, it's a test bench that, you know, normally the top of the test bench is where your motherboard goes. But what he's done, he's put a piece of acrylic that acts as a reservoir in tubing or in channels, I guess, for the coolants. And then the motherboard sits on top of that. And I think it just looks so different than a lot of things we've seen.
Yeah, I think that concept is great. The acrylic reservoir serving as the tray is great. That's fantastic. Maybe he was just bored with the different tube layouts, you know, the hard tubing layouts, the direct lines, and he just wanted to go for a little bit of chaos or something. I'm not real sure. He definitely achieved it. I don't know. It reminds me of, do you remember those, like, little kid learning games that they'd have at, like, the doctor or the dentist?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking
about. Okay, so it had, like, all those wires that would wind around and you'd push the different, like, colored plastic beads around on them. Yeah, that's kind of what this looks like.
Yeah.
It's cool. It feels somewhat abstract, but I kind of think it loses it somewhere, too, for me. I don't know. It's obviously a lot of work went into this. It's really clean. It's a test bench, which is incredibly difficult to make clean as far as your cabling goes.
This is made by Barrow, who we've been talking about. They're kind of getting their name out there more. This is their test bench. Obviously, this has changed into something completely different. But
yeah,
I love the color. The chrome with like the red coolant, I think, is really great. On there, I think that's really cool. It is using a Radeon card, so that's definitely red. But yeah, all a lot of EK parts, I think, for the most part. And then he has the
EK box,
EK Fitz power fittings. Fitz power fittings. I don't know what the radiators are. I'm not sure.
Hardly even looked. He's got a pair of, what are they on the back? Pair of 240s. Yeah. They're EK radiators. Yeah,
those are EK. But it looks like can you get them that color? Or did he paint those?
They probably painted them.
Yeah, like I said, the color on the back with he painted the power supply and all that kind of stuff too. I think looks really good.
Did he paint the power supply or did he put a shroud on it? No, he painted it.
Yeah,
he left the end black for some reason though.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Maybe it is a shroud though. Maybe it almost looks like that's a. How would you even describe it? Like a bucket almost that it sits in?
Yeah, like a holder. Like more like a power supply holder. Still, I think it looks great. Really interesting. And again, this isn't a PC OLED dynamic build, which we've been featuring so much. I think it looks good. Definitely check this one out. Just something different, something unique, more unique. And I like stuff like this. It kind of goes against like the traditional build, I would say. So very, very cool. Cool lines, and definitely we don't see that many test bench mods really, and I think this is probably the best one we've ever seen. I can't remember one that was that was this type of quality, so definitely check this one out. Really, really cool stuff there. And we'll move into news, and starting with GPU news. And the one interesting thing that Nvidia had their investor day, and they talked about the adoption of Turing GPUs, and they were saying...
More like they talked about how much they're not adopted.
Yeah, well, they were saying that the big thing was this, like, Turing GPUs sold more than Pascal GPUs during the launch, which is like, you kind of expect that. Like, it's the launch. They're going to sell more Turing GPUs during that time than...
during the same time period? Yeah.
Yeah, so... the install base currently, I don't know when all this data was taken. Does it say? I don't know. But, I mean, the install base is currently sitting at 2% Turing cards. So that includes, you know, all your RTX cards and then the new GTX Turing cards as well.
Yeah.
And then 50% is Pascal. And then the other 48% is older GPUs, older generations.
Which is super telling as well.
Yeah, one thing that was really interesting is, I don't, like, again, this is during their investor day, so they're trying to sound good, but, like, people are upgrading to much more expensive cards. So some, like, people that had, like, a 1080 Ti are upgrading to a 2080 Ti, which I wouldn't say is needed. You know, and people that are upgrading, you know, they're upgrading to these higher cards, which is kind of, I don't know, like, I guess just people, there is a lot of people out there that just don't care about money and they're just, I want the newest thing when it comes to PC stuff. But 2% adoption rate, that, I mean, again, this is like NVIDIA saying that this is, you know, you would think like 10%. I mean, again, these just came out. These just came out. Yeah. You know, but 2%?
That's like announcing you failed.
Yeah. 2% in what? 8 months? 6 months? 6 months. Probably 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah. I would at least say 10. Like 10 would be good, I would say, for that short of period.
At least.
You know, because your previous generation still works great. And a lot of people, you know, but this was like the generation that a lot of people say people would be upgrading. People would be, you know, the RTX is a new thing. This is like the new improvement in graphics.
That's what we thought that it should have been, but so they priced it straight out of the market.
Yeah, I would say at least 10% would be good, and 2% is pretty bad. Hopefully, in their next thing, we'll see if there's more adoption. I think with the new Turing cards, the lower cost ones coming out, we will see more adoption. But again, those higher price cards, they're just priced out of the reach for a lot of people. They just really are. And it's really interesting that, again, Pascal only has 50% and the other 48% is older hardware. A lot of people,
you can't
still
even get people to give up their old stuff.
Yeah, because I mean, it's for a lot of titles, it still works. And it also comes down to like resolutions. 1080p is still the thing. And a lot of older generation cards can do that. Even, you know, you can still turn settings down a little bit and get over 60 FPS. So what's the point? I think, too, it has a lot to do with, like, CPU market stuff. I mean, Intel stuff is very expensive. Ryzen's doing pretty good, but a lot of people want to wait for that third generation, which is coming out. So maybe people are in between builds, too. It's 2%. That's pretty bad. I'd have to say.
I also think that the slide talking about the majority are buying up is fairly misleading. That is always what happens. You sell your old GPU typically, and then you obviously buy the next step up. Like,
yeah,
that is what. That's not really like, you know what I mean? That's like that's the path that like the majority of people take, I would say. So 90% doing that.
Yep.
There's nothing to brag about in any of this, I don't think. I'm surprised an investor meeting.
Again, I haven't looked at their stock price lately, but it hasn't been great.
No.
You know, so I think they're trying to make the best out of the data that they had, that they have to, like, I'm pretty sure legally they have to show.
They do, yeah. But, so, like, get a better analyst.
Yeah. this past week was GDC, Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, and there was
lots of stuff,
pretty much almost all of the stories we have come, well, not all of them, but a handful of the next stories are about GDC. The big thing, was Intel, talking about their graphics cards, and they did show a render of what, artists made for their graphics cards. They had initially released a render back early or late last year, which I didn't like so much with the fan in the center.
Like a flower design?
Yeah. So this new design, which again is just concept art. It's not even like proto. It's not even like this is what it's going to be. This is just, you know. It looks a lot like their PCI Express solid state drives. But you have a blower style fan in there. Small card. For sure. So I don't know if their first launch is going to be more mainstream market, which if it's Intel kind of makes sense because that's where you're going to sell the most product. But I do like it. I don't know what you think about the design, full backplate on it. And again, this is not a final design. This is just an artist render. But I don't think it looks horrible.
I don't think it looks horrible. I just think it looks obvious.
Yeah.
That's Intel. That's their pretty basic design. I don't really find Intel's designs to be totally interesting or groundbreaking in any way, and I don't think they're meant to be. But I think when you're talking GPU, you're talking a whole new market segment for them, and you might want to make things a little bit more appealing to that particular group of people. I mean, you're talking about gamers here. So,
yeah.
I mean, and you're coming up, go ahead.
The interesting thing that I actually just thought of right now is that will Intel have board partners? Will they? That's an interesting thing because
Anybody have the capacity for it? Does everybody have the capacity to do it?
I mean, I know Asus does for sure.
Yeah.
Because all their stuff's automated now. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too. Like, are we going to see an Intel, Asus, ROG, Strix, and are we going to see those?
They have their own facilities, so.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting thing too. But it is cool to see this. It's like, this shows that they're like, yeah. Like, you know,
yeah.
This is coming. Very exciting, I think. I think GPU like stuff is just awesome, and getting another player only makes things better. If the product sucks, it's still gonna steal some market share from the other two. I think it looked that the GPU looks all right.
Suck, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna suck with ever all the news we've been seeing and everything like that. I don't think it's gonna be horrible. But also, besides those little renders that they showed, they introduced their Graphics Command Center app, which you can actually get in on the, I guess you would call it beta or whatever now. It only works with Intel graphics right now. So if you have a processor that has built-in graphics, which a lot do, or a laptop that has built-in graphics, you can use this software. But compared to NVIDIA's Control Center, which looks like it was made in...
Dude, don't stop. You're hating. Don't be hating.
Oh, man. But it brings everything into one nice interface. It looks good. As I said in last week's podcast, I love that Intel is pushing not only on the like hardware front, but they're going to have software to back it up that's going to be good. At least they have an initiative to make it good.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to be good. They have initiative to make it good.
Seems super basic, though.
Yeah, but again, this is right now. This is limited to what non-discrete graphics can do,
right?
This is like the beta first thing. I mean, it's going to be expanded on this, but you can't if you do have a CPU that has integrated graphics. You can download this and kind of mess with it, or a laptop that does. We have the link in the article, but like I said, I think that Intel is really making this push, and it's going to be a big push. We've already seen with all their hires over the past few months and everything that they're doing. It's good to see. And it's good to see that they, as a company, are excited about it, not like, oh, here it is. Like, you know, they're having these events. They're talking to customers. They're talking to gamers. They're doing all this stuff. So I'm excited for it. I think come CES, you know, it's going to be a big thing. It's going to be one of the big talks of the show, I think. At least hopefully.
You think CES might be the launch event?
Yes. I believe it will be. But you never know.
Yeah.
CES is a big show for Intel on different fronts. They've always announced something at CES. They said this card is coming in 2020. I mean, what better way? Although they could do GDC, which is huge. But GDC is more geared towards developers rather than...
You're getting far fewer public eyes on it.
Yeah, so I think CES would be the thing. Intel has the biggest space at CES for the most part, too. So,
Well, so, and they certainly kind of need something to put them back on the map there. So.
Yeah, so I think that's when we'll see it, but who knows. But I'm excited for it. One other really interesting announcement at GDC was Stadia from Google. Streaming gaming has been a thing. We've seen it. We've seen NVIDIA has a service, AMD has a service, Amazon has a service, Sony has a service for PlayStation Now. They're all there, but they require semi-decent hardware. All of them do. They require a physical PC that it might not be the best PC, but you still need the computing power, and you still get lag. You still get this.
Well, that's really it. It's the lag.
Yeah, so
the infrastructure in the United States, Canada, just all of America is not built for this. Probably not Europe either, really, if we're being honest, most of it. Just for what you're going to want to use, the games you're going to want to play on this, the people that this is targeting, they're going to want to play multiplayer, and the latency is just going to be the issue.
Yeah, so the one thing that I did like about this was that... The way this is going to work, it's going to work on any Google device. It's going to work within Chrome. It's going to work on a Chromecast and all that. But say you watch a game trailer on YouTube, there's going to be a play now button, and you click it, and it says within 5 seconds the game's going to launch. Which looks pretty awesome, but again, we talk about internet speeds. They said you'll need a 25 megabit connection, which is pretty basic these days.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, you know, now Google is Google, and this is all based on their data center network and their speed and everything like that. You know, but they're saying 4K 60 FPS with HDR on any device, whether it's a laptop, desktop, tablet, TV, anything, your phone. You know what I mean? Like,
I believe they even claimed 8K. They're building for 8K.
Yeah, which again,
dude, that's so much bandwidth.
This is like what people thought the PC would be, right? You would have a console, you know, whatever it may be, like a lightweight device, and then everything would be computed out there, like on, you know, in the internet. Like, that's what PCs were originally kind of designed for. Yeah. I just don't think, based on the connectivity, I don't think it's just not going to work how they want it to work. I could be completely wrong. We Googled, I mean, they showed demos and stuff. They showed it with Doom Eternal working at 60 FPS at 4K.
But people have used this and said it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, we've already seen reports that says that there's latency issues and things like that.
Anybody that has played on PC is going to know the difference.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is like, this is great for casual gamers and people want to jump into like a
like a
single player game. But if we're playing Battlefield 5, if we're playing Apex Legends, if we're playing even Fortnite or any fast paced game where you need high frame rates, this is not going to be it.
It's not only dependent on Google, it's also dependent on your ISP. So like, if you have a crap ISP, like, nothing that Google can do, nothing that their servers are doing is going to, you know, fix that. It's just I think they've got a lot of ideas, right? Yeah. But like, it's not they're also like touting it as like a new thing. It's like, dude, this is around, you know, it's around, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. And one thing that I did like, what was cool, is like, they showed that you could be playing on your PC, pause the game, open it on your phone, and you can continue on your phone. I think that is awesome. I hate, even now we have like cloud saves, we have all this stuff in Steam, but it's just like, it's not cohesive like that. So if they could figure that problem out too, I think would be amazing. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it's not the first time we've been promised that though.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a PlayStation device? Well, I mean, the Switch for one thing, where, oh, you're playing on the TV and then you just pick it up and you walk away and you're playing on it, and like, it's, we've seen it not work in the past.
Yeah. But, so this
it is within Chrome. So
yeah, perhaps it launches this year across North America and Europe. No pricing.
And you better hope that you don't have a bandwidth limit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I heard the number is 48 or 50 hours of gaming a week will hit your standard limit.
Yeah, so I don't...
It's
not a whole... I mean, that's a decent amount of time.
Maybe it's... No, a month.
A month.
48 or 50 hours a month. That is not enough for most gamers.
Yeah, yeah, it's not enough. Especially if you're playing, like, you know, long single-player games, or there's multiple people in the house playing, too. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so I think Google has great ideas. It's all about the implementation, and we've said that with all of these services from the beginning. It's all about the implementation, and if I'm a PC gamer, I'm a high FPS PC gamer, if I can't tell the difference, then we're good. Until then, just don't. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got a good 10 or 15 years before that gets there. Seriously. My personal opinion is that nothing like this is ever going to fully take the place of an in-home device that's doing the number crunching. It's just not probable, at least not in this country with the type of technology we have now.
Like I said, I say for casual games that aren't intensive, yeah, it will work, and you're not going to care about the latency. But to stream a 4K game across the internet with no latency,
no,
I just don't see it.
Dude, you can't
4K 60 FPS.
You can't stream most high-end PCs can't stream 4K 60 frames per second from the PC to the monitor.
Yeah, I know.
So
yeah, so we'll see. But moving back to more PC, real PC related stuff. A list of upcoming Asus X570 motherboards has been leaked. So awesome to see. I love leaks for motherboards because X570 will be for Ryzen's 3000 series processors, which I'm super excited about. This is all the usual suspects. We have, you know, the Republic of Gamer Crosshairs, the Republic of Gamer Strix boards. There is a Republic of Gamer Crosshair 8 Impact. I think that's the mini ITX board. I'm not sure. Cool stuff to see. I'm super excited for Ryzen 3000 series. I think that's the time for them to really take the move the sticks as far as like market share. I think it's going to be a good thing for them. I think all the boards are going to be awesome from all the different manufacturers, but good to see. We're going to see all this from Asus, and this isn't the full list. This is just like what's been leaked. So we will see.
I mean, and it's a solid 12 boards too.
Yeah, those can be a lot more than this as well.
It's pretty good. This is a pretty good list to start from, though. Much better than I think we saw with previous releases.
Yeah, so, and also part of the rumor is that AMD is designing the chipset in-house. So the previous chipsets were designed by AS Media, and this is going to, and they've had issues, especially with first generation chipset. That could mean even more optimization and things like that, you know, since AMD is designing the chipset in-house, which is pretty cool. These will be the first motherboards, at least rumored, to use PCI Express 4.0 too. So that's exciting as well. So cool stuff. I'm pretty pumped for Ryzen 3000 series. But if you are using it, this is just like one good thing into one bad thing. If you are using an Asus product, laptop, motherboard, built PC, any Asus device, and if you've been using their live update feature, which is a great feature, you could be you could have got malware on your system. Hackers were able to infiltrate the live update servers and use Asus's valid digital certificates to, you know, kind of hide their malware. Hide their malware. And when you went to go do an update, it would be included. And now you're infected. You know, like I said, I think the live update's great. If you're building a PC and you install live update, it downloads all your drivers, it downloads all your software, it does everything for you. And it's awesome. It's great.
I don't think so.
I strongly
disagree.
I'm not a fan of having an auto update. I'm not that fan. But I'm a fan of like, if I build a system, I download one app that downloads everything for me and installs it.
I think everybody should go through the process carefully, looking at your drivers, choosing what you need.
No, this allows you to choose what you need.
I know, but you go to the website, you download the driver, you keep it clean. Keep it simple.
I don't know, but in any case,
don't let them put their bloatware on your system. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's like I said, you choose what you want, which is good. Which before, back in the day when you did the auto update, it installed Chrome, all the Chrome.
But even the Asus program is going to be running and doing stuff all the time.
No, live update doesn't run all the time unless you set it to.
It's got to check.
Well, yeah, but what I mean is, like, you set it to not run when Windows starts, and it doesn't run at all.
All right.
Yeah. But in any case, there's at least 500,000, million devices have been infected. You know, I think this is a lot of, like, laptops, too. This is a lot of, like, Asus laptops where, like, those type of customers, not the DIY people, you know, they just, for me? Okay, sure, you know.
The same people who've never reinstall Windows on their system for the life of it,
so this was discovered by Kaspersky Labs, and they had sent they discovered it in January 2019, and they informed Asus by late January. They even sent a representative to meet with Asus in February, And Kaspersky has claimed that Asus has been largely unresponsive since then and has not notified their customers about the issue. That is a bad look by Asus. Yeah. That Kaspersky had to put this out, because usually Kaspersky or any of these cybersecurity firms would be like, we found this issue, patch it, let your customers know. When it's gone so long that nothing has happened and that Kaspersky has to put this out on their own, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty bad.
I mean, yeah. As Asus, why would you not be proactive in getting out in front of this?
Yeah, especially, you know, we've had issues with Asus software auto-installing things in the past, and they haven't had the best reputation for things like this. So I would say if you are an Asus customer, you have either Asus motherboard, Asus laptop, or, you know, anything like that. If you've updated since January any of your drivers, software, anything, run anti-malware software, run your antivirus, or just do a complete reinstall. But again, they say that Asus has been unresponsive, so when you go to download those drivers again, you could run into problems.
Where is it infected? Is it infected in the live update, or is it infected in their driver database?
It's infected in the live update, but
so their manual driver database should be clean.
Yeah, or I wouldn't say like install the drivers from the, like, you know, install the LAN driver from Intel directly. Install the I would do that. Install the graphics driver from NVIDIA or Intel.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're gonna do that, but there's gonna be certain drivers, I believe, that you couldn't just, that they're gonna be from Asus, right?
Yeah,
kind of think about what you're gonna get.
Yeah, like the chips are. Yeah.
Can I navigate to Asus.com without being infected?
It's hard to tell at this point.
We don't know where the...
I want to stay as far away from it as I possibly can. You know what I mean? Because that's the last thing you want to do, because, you know, you get something on your system where it's so infected that you have to do a complete reinstall, and that's not fun either.
Yeah, especially if you use your
the big thing with this is that Asus hasn't made a statement. They haven't said they fixed the issue.
Yeah, I don't see an announcement on their website.
Yeah, so. This came out yesterday, I believe. The stories came out yesterday. And again, for a company like Kaspersky Labs to say they've been unresponsive is pretty bad.
They just have to come out with it, so.
Yeah. So, pretty bad news for Asus, but we'll move on to something really exciting, and we'll hopefully be getting one of these for review, is that HyperX, their quadcast microphone, which we saw at CES, is now available. This microphone is cool. a streaming microphone. We made a video on it at CES. It looks awesome. Go ahead.
Sorry. I think it could look a little better. I don't like that it's just the red and black like set like that. It's not very customizable in that way. But the design of it, I think, is fantastic.
I like the design. I like that it's USB, you know, simple to use. I like that it does have a shock mount. I like that you can mount it to an arm. I like the gain control right under it.
I like the tap on, tap off mute.
Yeah,
I think that's great.
It's
not something you get with most mics. So.
Yeah, I think that this market is fairly unserved. We have the Blue microphones. Razer makes some.
I think you're right. Yeah,
and that's it.
there's a whole genre of professional quality mics, but that's beyond what most people are going to get into.
Yeah, and again, this is USB. You plug it in, it works. Yeah. You don't studio mic that I'm using now, I had to buy an interface and learn all that and do all that stuff. You know, this is just plug it in, it works, you're good to go.
It has a bunch of features at that same design.
Now, it's not cheap. It's $140. So
neither is any quality microphone.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're obviously paying for that extra stuff on top of it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So I like it. I think it's cool. Hopefully we'll be getting one into review and we'll let you know how it really is. But from what we saw at CES and everything, it looked like an awesome, awesome microphone.
Yeah. But I wish the lighting was RGB.
Yeah, I know. And, we said that. That's the one thing we said.
And that they should have made the shock straps. They should have just made them black, probably.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, then you'd be good to go in anybody's setup. Because now, like, so you just went and you spent, like, an extra $500 to make your PC case do all these crazy light things. And you're going to go and throw just a red and black microphone in front of it? I mean, come on now. You're that concerned about looks in the first place. So...
Yeah, so we'll see how it does. Like I said, I'm pretty excited for it. Yeah, it's good to see another player. And you know, headset mics are not great, especially if you're streaming, which this is kind of targeted towards. They're not great. So back to GDC stuff. Valve has announced a Steam interface overhaul, which is much needed.
Oh yeah.
And this might have something to do with Epic Game Store. You never know.
Well, you got some competition now, huh?
When I was writing this, I was like, this is like the Intel AMD thing. This is like,
it is.
We have competition. We have to do something now. So they're going to be overhauling the interface, the library specifically, which I think needed done for such a long time. It just didn't look like a library of games. It was just like a list, and it was just like not very.
It's actually sort of difficult to find what you were looking for.
Yeah.
If you knew specifically, obviously you can just go down and find the game. But if you're just like, what do I have and what do I want to play? It kind of didn't help you very much in that way.
Yeah. So now there is going to be tiles which show your library, which is kind of what you need. That's like any media library kind of looks like that software wise.
Anything modern. Yeah.
Yeah. There'll be like tiles for like your latest game that you played. The friends feed, they're the friends thing,
yeah,
is built into it now. It's not like a separate window, which that never made any sense to me. it's built into it now. You know, they'll be showing updates for the games that you do play. So say you played like a few games, the latest updates from the developer will be like on the main screen. You can organize games by the type of game, so like RPGs, things like that. It looks like you're going to be able to do like custom categories as well. Like say you and I play a game together or play a few games together, I can make a category called like games I play with Derek, and all those games are listed there, which is good as well. I think
that's probably just one game though.
Yeah it is in reality, yes, but I mean, I think that's cool.
Yeah. No, it's a cool feature.
You'll be able to filter your games by what type of game it is as well. So there's like a drop down and you can checkbox like, you know, a racing game and like survival game, and those are the games that will show up. So it's just easier way to find your games and organize your games and organize your library, which I think is something that's, again, has been needed for a very long time. And there's a new update thing called Steam Events, and this is just a way for developers to communicate with their audience, so people who are playing their game. Previously, developers would use the announcements inside the community page, but now there's this thing called Steam Events, which allows developers to create an event, and then the users of the game can subscribe to that event or ignore it. And when they subscribe, they can get an update, whether it's on Steam, you can get it on your phone, things like that. So it's just an easier way for developers to communicate with gamers, which I think is great as well. So I think, again, much needed. Might have something to do with the Epic Games Store. Mm-hmm. But yeah, cool
it's
stuff.
Just, yeah, it's very needed. When was the last update? Probably visual update, like 10 years ago?
I have no clue.
Yeah, probably like 5 or 6, if we're being real, but... yeah, and that really it hasn't changed much either when they have updated it. So
yeah, there hasn't been big changes. So this is good. Much needed. I think this again makes it visually nicer, which is a plus.
I mean, even like Origin and Ubisoft and other I don't know what you developers. Oh, those aren't really developers, but whatever.
Other game launchers.
Whatever you want to call it. Yeah, game launchers. They all have tiles for the games. Like that is such like a needed thing to like see what you've got. You know.
Yeah.
Like. You see that photo, you see the cover art, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's what I want to play right now. That's what I'm feeling. When you're just browsing, like just looking at titles, it's like, yeah, I don't know about you, but I just buy games. I don't even necessarily, like when they're on sale, I don't even necessarily know I have them.
There's so many games that I don't even know I have. I just, yeah.
Yeah. So if I had a little tile to tell me, I might play it.
You look at your list, you're like, what is that? I don't even know what game, what did that even is?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so yeah. So another good thing in the gaming realm is that Epic Games announced their $100 million grant program. So basically, they have a ton of money, and from Fortnite. From Fortnite. You know, so part of that money obviously is being used to launch the Epic Games Store. The other part is this mega grant program, and this is a way that they're going to be giving back to community, which will give grants to developers from anywhere from $5,000 to $500,000. And this is not just for game development. It's that, you know, any application that makes use of Unreal Engine, say like a CAD program will use Unreal Engine or things like that. Both, not only like media and entertainment creators that use Unreal Engine can apply. And this is also like as a student and school. So like if your school uses Unreal Engine, you can get a grant, you know, to buy better PCs for the students or things like that. And this is completely no strings attached. Meaning that once you get the grant, everything created has Epic has no leeway over what it is. Nice.
They have no rights, no nothing like that.
Yeah, no rights, nothing. Sweet. You know, so you can submit
working on their tax write off.
Yeah, you can submit. you know, either your application, your game, as long as it's really running Unreal Engine. You can submit it and get some money, which could, you know, help infuse creators and things like that and make developing much easier. This is great. I think this is awesome. I think that this just obviously they're doing this to get more people using Unreal Engine. But at the same time, this is great for I think it's going to be great for schools that make use of Unreal Engine to buy better PCs and things like that. Getting a, you know, even well, getting $5,000.
Well, indie devs, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Indie devs, all that stuff is going to be awesome. So it's just a great way for them to give back. They've been getting a lot of bad press with Epic Games Store, so this is kind of good.
I feel like this is where they should have started rather than trying to get exclusives. I mean, actually, I think you said in the article that this actually has been going since before the Epic Games Store launched.
Yeah, but I think they put
more up money. The amount. Okay.
Yeah, up the amount.
Yeah, 100 mil is a bit.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And they said if you needed over 500,000 that you had to, you can request like, I guess you request the amount that you want or something.
Where do I submit specifically, Bob? Because it turns out I could use some cash.
Yeah, you're like, I use that Epic thing, right?
Yeah.
If you want to, if you need over 500,000, you can contact them directly, I guess, or they want to know more.
You probably want a little FaceTime.
Yeah. Or no, if you're requesting more than 25,000, we want to hear about your plans to use the funds. And if your plan to use the funds changes over the course of your project, that's perfectly fine. So like if you maybe need more money or something like that. But I again, this
so
is
for
great.
Under for under 25 grand, though, I could just get cash is what you're saying.
I don't think that's how it works, but
that's what I'm hearing.
Not at all. But yeah, really cool, great way to get back community, and great way to like you said, have a little tax write-off from all those skins people are buying for Fortnite.
Yeah,
so.
Skin dollars.
Yeah. So talking about it's not the first, but probably the battle royale game that started the craze, PUBG, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Yes. They announced their 2-year anniversary, which it seems like it's been longer, but I guess it hasn't.
That feels about right.
2 years old. It is the game that started the Battle Royale craze. They commemorated the second anniversary with a free in-game item, which is a second anniversary hat that you can pick up. And they left a on their Steam page, they did leave a nice long kind of... what would you call it? Like letter to all the gamers out there playing and all their
thank
fans.
You, letter.
Yeah. And their CEO made a video to thank all the fans. It's in Korean, but it's on YouTube, so you can use closed captioning to get the English. But that's cool. You know, I never played it. You played it.
Played a lot.
Yeah. So I never really played it. Never really got into it. Sadly, Fortnite was the game that got me into Battle Royales, really.
Yeah.
That's okay. So, yeah. But very cool. Great to see them do 2 years. That's awesome. Also talking about gaming is that DICE unveiled their 2019 Battlefield 5 roadmap. So things that are going to be happening. And first, Firestorm launched.
Yesterday.
That launched yesterday. And that's, with that, they dropped the price of the game down to $30.
No way.
Yeah, so if you want to pick it up, it is on sale.
Yeah, I'm going to do that right now.
Okay. And they announced, let me see here. So Chapter 3 is called Trial by Fire, and that launched with Firestorm. And they have different things like launching in April, May, and June as part of Trial by Fire. You'll get a new combined arms missions. You'll get a new map, and you'll get a new Mediterranean map as well, and a new hardcore mode. And they'll come out in April, May, and June. And then Chapter 4, Define the Odds, that will come out in June. So when that last mode comes out, you'll get a new chapter, and that will have more stuff. And then in the fall, you'll get Chapter 5, which will have more stuff. It's called All Out Invasion in a New Theater of War, which people are saying is going to be the Pearl Harbor attack and the Japanese entrance That'd into World War II, which I think would be good.
Yeah.
You know, sadly, this is how games are now. We get stuff coming out as, as
are those all along. Are those all purchases, or are those included in the original purchase?
I think in
Battlefield tradition, those are purchases.
Yeah, I think it's part of
those
season.
Those are DLCs.
Yeah, if you have the season pass, you get them. If not, you have to pay for the DLC. I don't know.
Well, they have what do they call it now? Origin Access.
Yeah, so
I'm guessing it's included with that. But also, in my findings in the past, it might not be true anymore. If you wait, wait for everything to come out. Maybe you want to play it as it comes out. But if you wait till it all is done releasing, you can generally get everything for $20 or $30.
Yeah.
All the maps and everything all at the end. But I mean, maybe you want to play it as it comes. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's good to see that they do have a roadmap, and if you're a big fan of Battlefield 5, you'll see a lot of more, a lot of things coming out in the coming months, which is exciting. If you're a big fan of that game.
Yeah.
So that is it. That's our news for this week. We'll talk about what we have coming next week. I will be checking out the Inwin 915. This is a massive case. That's why I didn't get it done. Wait until you see this review. There's so many cool things on this case. It actually surprised me. I thought it's a really cool case. There's a lot going on with it, so I'm really excited to check it out. And I'll also be taking a look at a very fast NVMe solid state drive. It is the WD Black SN750. Super, super fast. This is the one that we talked about that had the EK heatsink, but that one's not available. So they have one without a heatsink. Yeah. And what's interesting is the heatsink is a $30 premium. That seems like a lot for a piece of aluminum? A
piece of aluminum, yeah. Well, it says EK on it though.
Yeah, it does. And it does
you're going to say?
It does look awesome. It does look very cool.
It's true.
I have to say, yeah.
And it does have thermal pads, so.
Yeah, yeah.
You get that too. Don't discount that.
But I will be checking out the one that doesn't. Still super excited because it is very, very fast. The last WD Black Drive was extremely fast, extremely awesome. So I'm pretty excited to check out this one as well.
Which one are you checking out? The 500?
The 1 terabyte.
Oh, you got the terabyte. Nice.
Yes.
So I like the write speed. The write speeds, I guess, go up, but the read speeds are consistent once you hit the 500. That's pretty good scaling. Oh, it actually drops at 2 for the write speeds. Interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that happen, or I just haven't noticed. Is that standard?
Oh, it does drop for the 2 terabyte. I guess it's because it has to.
Traditionally, it just goes up.
Yeah, that's weird. I've never seen that. That might be a typo. I'll have to see. Usually, it stays the same. Like once you get to a certain point, it stays the same.
Yeah, yeah. It reaches its density or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't notice that for the 2 terabyte. The write speed's slower.
Yeah.
Because you are writing to more cells, I would say.
Right, but that's what's supposed to make it faster. Because it doesn't have to rewrite.
I don't know. But in any case, we'll be taking a look at it. And this does have the new WD SSD dashboard, which I'm excited to check out. It's the first time they've had it. So that allows you to like check on the status of the drive. It allows you to do performance checks. It allows you to safely format it. And if you're, you know, selling it or selling your PC that has it in it, all that cool stuff. So excited to check that out.
Nice looking piece of software too, the interface.
Yeah, it looks good. So that brings us to the end of the podcast. That's where we talk about if we've seen anything or if we've watched anything or if we've done anything tech or nerd related. Have you done anything? Nothing.
I did my taxes.
Yeah, it's tax season. Tax season's coming up.
That was it.
So I saw a movie in the movie theater, which is surprising because I don't typically go. But it was date night with me and my girlfriend, and we saw Us. And I'm not a scary movie fan. I'm just not. I think they're dumb. And the thing I liked about this movie, it's not traditionally a scary movie. I don't know who the guy is. I'm sure you know who he is. The same director as Get Out. Sapool or something his name is, I think.
Yeah, why can't I remember it? They're comedians.
In any case.
Jordan Peele.
Yeah. Pool. In any case, so I didn't see any. I've never seen any of his movies. I don't like scary movies.
You didn't see Get Out?
No, I did not.
Oh. You probably would have known much more what you were getting into.
Yeah, so I didn't know. I thought it was going to be a traditional scary movie, so I watched it. I was like, what the hell? But the one thing I liked, it was funny.
Yeah.
It was funny.
So is Get Out, yeah.
Yeah, so like I don't like super scary stuff. It's just kind of dumb and like it's so predictable. This one was kind of predictable still, but because it was funny, I enjoyed it. Like it was just funny.
Sure, a lot of ironic stuff.
Yeah, so it was
still being very political.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool. So if you're not a fan of scary movies, that's one that I would recommend. I think it was cool. Nice. That's pretty much it. I just been working on stuff here. We've been streaming, playing a lot of Apex Legends. We're doing all that kind
of
stuff.
A lot of Legends.
Yeah. So we'll wrap it up here. As I always say, we have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about. So if you want even more detail, you can go ahead and click through. And if you're looking to subscribe, it's just Think Computers, all one word, on all of your favorite podcasting software or apps. So until next time, catch you guys later.